John Everin, you are here in Germany researching about football. What do you do these days? You have a scholarship.
Yes, I'm on a four-month DAAD scholarship. I'm coming from the United States, Duke University, and I'm doing research on the connections and dialogues and exchanges between Germany, West Germany, and Turkey in the field of football. I'm looking at ways in which Turkish sports people, physical education teachers, sport coaches came to Germany to attend courses, seminars, and try to learn about sports policy, football policy, etc.
Which archives do you use these days?
I spent some time in the Cologne Sporthochschule library, which has a big sport inventory. So I looked at the German Coaches Association seminar, old seminars where Turkish coaches attended. I looked at some students from Turkish sports schools who came to study in Cologne.
So has there been a lot of Turkish scholars before you here?
No, these were not many, but these were important people, number of people coming from similar universities in Turkey, Sporthochschules in Turkey, and coming to do their diploma arbeit here sometimes. So they could go back to Turkey and sort of bring back a certain knowledge from Europe.
And you're researching about football relations between Germany, Europe, and Turkey. But why are you in the United States? Does it have to do with Erdogan and a lot of scholars leaving these days?
No, I'm doing my PhD in the United States. It's because schools are good there.
So the other day, you were having a presentation in the University of Essen-Duisburg about the importance of German-Turkish football relation. Now, this is interesting because normally German-Turkish relations are difficult. But at that time, you were telling us it was a love affair.
Yes, in 1984, actually, the German football coach, Jupp Derweil, came to Istanbul because Galatasaray hired him as head coach after he resigned from the German national team. And he was very well welcomed because he was seen as representing the highest level of European football because he was coaching Germany. And at the time, Turkish football teams and the national team wanted to make a reform and improve and compete against stronger teams. So his arrival in Turkey was seen as an opportunity by the national team, also by the football public in general, to reform and modernize Turkish football, to learn from Germany, because Germany was a very successful nation in football, still is.
Though we remember Derweil as the loser in a big 78 World Cup, and he hasn't got a good image here, but in Turkey it's the opposite.
Yes, because Turkey was a very weak football country at the time. They just that year lost 8-0 to England. So there was a sense of big inferiority against Europe. And many people thought at the time the way to change this is to learn from successful nations, and the way to learn was to bring these people who worked in these. Derweil is not known for his success, but he worked in the German Football Federation for 14 years, from 1970 to 84. So he knew all around organizational aspects of football. So he was governors and club administrators thought he could give the secret. He could teach Turkish coaches, Turkish sports administrators how to organize football at a national scale.
So what exchange started with his person?
I think there are two most important things. One was that Turkish Football Federation translated the West German Football Federation's organizational schema and tried to implement it, and Derweil was kind of an advisor to that. And second of all, which is more familiar with the German listeners, I think, is that with Derweil started this long history of players and coaches from Germany coming to Turkey. First one was Erdal Keser. It was a young, talented player at Dortmund, and then Tufekci. I think he was with Stuttgart at the time. So Turkish team started showing interest in German football because there are always these Turkish players who had Turkish passports, and at the time in Turkey, teams had a quota of two maximum foreign players. So these German-Turkish footballers were very valuable. And I think people like Derweil and later Christoph Daum, Holger Osiek, and many other coaches came after Derweil. Derweil is seen as a sign of starting point. And they were important for these connections with Germany and bringing these players, convincing them to come to Turkey. And what happened was, shortly after Derweil came, about 4 or 5 years later, the team he coached, Galatasaray, was very successful in the Champions League.
But one of your research theses is that this openness to the West at some point changed to an anti-Westernism. So when does this happen and why?
Yes, as I say, in the 80s, in Turkey, joining the EU was a very important project. I think society-wise, there was an expectation, a desire to join. And football was kind of a symbol of this. In the 1990s, in my research, I also observed, especially in the 1990s, as Turkish football teams actually became more successful, some of the games, very tight and competitive games against European rivals, became occasions for more anti-Westernist sentiment.
For example,
the first time Galatasaray was actually successful in 1988, they played a game against Neuchâtel Xamax from Switzerland in the quarterfinals. And after the game, Galatasaray was banned by the UEFA. And everybody accused the UEFA for becoming a sort of having an anti-Turkish conspiracy. Maybe it was a bad decision, and it was actually repealed, the decision to ban Galatasaray. But many of these events happened. The more teams became successful in the 1990s, there was many of these disputes with UEFA, which the Turkish media started blaming UEFA for not wanting Turks. And one reason for this is that...
Is it a complex of inferiority?
Partly, but for me, my research shows that in the 1990s, these, on the one hand, Turkish football teams were doing better, playing Galatasaray was going to the Champions League. On the other hand, Turkey was very involved with trying to join the EU. But EU was making certain demands on Turkey, especially concerning EU human rights violations sometimes, or to abandon certain nationalist values. And there were times in which EU was seen as a negative or somehow a foreign force, forcing the Turkish national establishment. And football was, my research shows that some crucial football games against Europe overlapped with some of these political tensions. For example, in 1999, Galatasaray was actually very successful playing in the Champions League, and there was a game against Juventus, Italian team. At that very week, the PKK leader, the Kurdish armed movement's leader, Öcalan, was in exile. He was in Italy, and Turkey was trying to pressure Italy to extradite Öcalan to Turkey. The game was played exactly at the middle of this political crisis. And what happened was, this Juventus game became a big occasion for nationalist demonstrations, burning of Italian flags, anti-Western sentiment, and newspapers were full of images depicting the Pope and Juventus somehow siding with Öcalan against the Turkish nation. And the competitive atmosphere of the football game usually magnified these tensions. And there was many of these examples in the 1990s.
You include actually cartoons also in your research. And you told me you have gone to the stadiums as a supporter or as an observer a lot in these years. What did you observe in the slogans? Can you give us an example who would underline this?
Of course, it changes from club to club, but there is an overall atmosphere of right-wing sentiment in the stadiums, especially in the Turkish interior, in the more smaller clubs, in like places like Bursa, Sakarya, Kocaeli, in the first division. But usually these teams come after the Istanbul three giants, Beşiktaş, Fenerbahçe, Galatasaray. And in the 90s, this is one of the things, the games against European rivals were big games. And the slogan, the biggest slogan was, "Europe, hear our voice. It's the Turks coming to get you," or something like that. So the more these big games against Europe, actually Turkish teams improved, there was this mass explosion of this idea of Turkey becoming powerful again, becoming the Ottoman Empire again, and kind of conquering Europe. And actually, the biggest success after this 10 years of improvement in the 1990s, Galatasaray won the 2000 UEFA Cup. And the coach who led the team was named the Emperor. And the team was called the Conquerors of Europe. So this rivalry against Europe was seen not as a sort of participation, joining Europe, but as a hostile fight against Europe. And I think, for example, after Galatasaray won the UEFA Cup, one newspaper at the time said the game was played in Copenhagen, and the headline was, "Take this for Copenhagen criteria," because as I was telling before, there was this idea that joining the EU, the attempt to join the EU, was kind of ruining or undermining nationalist values. So this national victory, football victory, was symbolized as sort of getting back, hitting back at the European values. I think in the 1990s, this idea of joining the EU was tested by these political fights, and football kind of got in the middle of these. And I think in football public, the stronger tone was a anti-Westernist tone.
You mentioned in your research also the word of conspiracy, and that is a time when Erdogan comes to power in the AKP. Do they make use of this conspiracy? Do they make it bigger? What changes with AKP?
Well, actually, in 2002, when AKP came to power, they were quite explicitly pro-EU, pro-Western, and this policy continued for about a decade. And actually, a good football example is from 2009, when Turkey was playing Armenia in the World Cup or EU qualifiers, Euro qualifiers. And there was this, at the time, there was a reconciliation attempt with Armenia as part of the pro-EU process. And the government spent a lot of effort to make sure the game didn't turn into a nationalist demonstration, similar, because they know this from 1990s, from the example of Juventus I was giving. And they knew that the civilian football culture was quite prone to these far nationalist demonstrations. So they made sure that this was a diplomatic occasion, that there were no anti-Armenian slogans. And this was played in Bursa, my hometown actually. The fans were convinced to not do any aggressive chants. Pigeons were flied. So AKP actually even tried to tone down this nationalism when it came to diplomatic pro-EU efforts. This is a very difficult example because Armenian games are very tense because of the nationalist sentiment. But I think in the latest years, of course, Erdogan took a different turn. But one thing to understand is, from the perspective of football is still in Turkey very Eurocentric, very much centered on Europe. Turkey is a member of UEFA. Football clubs love the idea of competing with fans love the idea that they will face Real Madrid, Bayern Munich one day, play in the Champions League one day. They dream about it. But then their values, football fandom, the values of the fans are rarely very pro-EU values. They're usually masculine gangs with anti-Western sentiments.
Finally, you actually say that the Turkish Football Federation, for example, is run following to AKP goals. What does it mean in practice?
In practice, it means that the federation, football federation, licenses all clubs. Every club is kind of under surveillance by the football federation. In the last 5-6 years, a team in Diyarbakir, for example, run by the municipality, started becoming a kind of a Kurdish national team, which is called Ahmet Spor. Today the name is...
This is Diyarbakir city.
Yeah, the city of Diyarbakir, but it was the municipal sports club, which was the more pro-Kurdish political movement. So what happens is that when these teams... For example, a player, Deniz Naki, a German-raised player, a Kurdish-German-raised, raised in Germany player, he plays for them. He started making political slogans. The Turkish Federation had the power to ban him from playing for about 15 games. He played for Sampdoria before. So the Federation, because it controls our disciplinary mechanism, when a club, for example, does not act in line with the political establishment, the Federation is tightly governed by these government or nationalist values, so it can punish clubs. So domestically, the government makes sure that the Federation is politically controlled, and so that the football clubs can be also administered, controlled, so that they don't act in independent ways. But when it comes to this anti-Westernism, it's very difficult to impose an anti-Europe on football in general. For Erdogan once suggested maybe Turkey should play in Asian Football Federation. This is easier to qualify for the World Cup. But this suggestion was not even taken seriously because, as I said, there are a lot of revenues that come from UEFA membership. The Turkish champion qualifies for the Champions League, which is a lot of revenue. And teams and fans also, as I said, desire to play and compete in Europe. As I say, this rivalry, unfortunately, often ends up in this mass celebrations of anti-Europe or like some sort of warlike attitude against Europe rather than some sort of playful together joining the EU and becoming a playful unity.
And Erdogan, is he perceived as a football fan or sports fan?
Yes, actually, he represents a center-right tradition in Turkey where the populist leader also wants to appeal to the football fans. He himself played football in an amateur level in the, I think, 4th or 5th division in a club in Istanbul, in his neighborhood. And he is known to be a big fan, Fenerbahce fan, and he's interested in football. But I would say the football also has its own internal rules, and there's a lot, because in Turkey everybody is in football, so it's not it's impossible to just control it totally.
I want to come back to the Kurdish conflict. Funnily, you describe one instance where the German police is told how to differentiate the flags. Maybe you can tell about this absurdity.
I think one of the reasons behind this anti-Western sentiment in 1990s was that after 1984, a lot of Kurdish activists and left-wing Turkish activists escaped to Europe, took political asylum. And at the time, when Galatasaray was becoming more successful in UEFA, some of these fans, some of these activists used the Galatasaray games and or national games in Europe as opportunities for protest. For example, in 1999, Turkey was playing Finland in Helsinki in June. And at the same day or day before, there was an important Turkey-EU meeting in Cologne, actually here. And the Kurdish diaspora wanted to make sure EU pressured Turkey more for human rights issues. And they stormed the pitch in Turkey-Finland national game in Finland with flags pointing to human rights violations and demand to, I think, to free Öcalan. I'm not sure, but these events happened many times throughout 1990s and 80s. And in some of these issues, how the nationalist establishment reacted to this is that to make sure they communicate more with police in Europe, to make sure they don't take PKK flags, for example, or protesting banners into the stadiums. So I read once in a newspaper, for example, that the Turkish police sends the image of Galatasaray flag and PKK flag and tells the German police, make sure that you take this in to the stadium, the other you don't take it in. And similarly, I've read like a Turkish Football Federation president.
Because is it so difficult to differentiate the Galatasaray and the PKK flag?
I think, I'm not sure about the details. I just read the report on newspapers. But the police might not just know about it because they might take any flag for a football flag. But also the controversy, one of the funny things is pro-PKK Kurds are used, known as Galatasaray fans, because Öcalan is known to be a Galatasaray fan. So most of them actually went to Galatasaray games in Europe just to support Galatasaray as well.
But that sounds like a big contradiction. Öcalan is a Galatasaray fan, you say. At the same time, they are the maximum nationalists.
See, this is one of the tricky aspects of Turkish football culture, especially these three teams in Istanbul, Galatasaray, Fenerbahce and Beşiktaş. Actually, everybody is a fan of either one of them. It's like leftist, right-wing, nationalist or not. They're kind of seen as national teams. And for some reason, Öcalan was a Galatasaray fan. And this happened when this more pro, like when the PKK movement get like sympathizers around the youth. Mostly they became Galatasaray fans if they were interested in football.
How do we know he was a Galatasaray fan?
He explicitly told it in an interview in 1991. He was interviewed couple of times by the Turkish mainstream media, and he actually explicitly said, because he was late to the interview, he was listening to a Galatasaray game on the radio or something like that.
Now, with a heavy military policy against the Kurds in southeast Anatolia, what has changed for football in daily life there?
Well, not only football, many things changed. To go back to the example, now the Kurdish movement seems to have its own national team, kind of like the Athletic Bilbao Basque relationship. They have their Ahmetspor, which is kind of run by the municipality. It's in the third division. It seems like the Kurdish youth who identifies with the Kurdish movement seems to support this team as a sort of a national team. It's kind of a new thing because in the 1990s this didn't exist. This was a relatively new team.
But otherwise, have football grounds been destroyed or is anything changed now?
Well, I don't think football grounds were destroyed, but of course, in times of war and destruction, football is usually second ground. It's it's not as a matter of life and death as other things, I suppose. But I think the emergence and this politically motivated football team also made the Football Federation quite conscious and like more active in trying to suppress it. As I said, Deniz Naki was fined for like absurd amounts of time for making political speeches, because the Turkish Football Federation, when it's politically controlled, it wants to make sure the football environment is not politically active.
We have now a race between Germany and Turkey for the 2024 European Football Championship. Now, who will win it, Germany or Turkey?
It's hard to say who will win, but there will be few factors to look out for. I mean, Germany is richer, has better infrastructure, and hosted the 2006 World Cup, so it has a very strong near experience. But on the other hand, when it comes to deciding these issues, UEFA wants to be inclusive. It doesn't want tournaments always played in the Western Europe. And Turkey will want to team up with delegates from smaller national states, I think, from Eastern Europe.
But does Turkey have the infrastructure in place already?
Yeah. One of the important elements of Erdogan's economic policy was the construction sector. So this meant like more than 30 new stadiums were constructed in Turkey in the last decade. Some of them are very well-looking, quite expensive modern structures. So this will be their biggest card on the table. And on the other hand, the increasing concern with human rights violations, increasing concern in the European public sphere about Turkey turning anti-Europe direction, I think these will be negative aspects, because as you know, Qatar will host the World Cup in 2022, and then there's all these concerns about Qatar, political instability, human rights violations, construction of stadiums.
Since the Olympics in China, we have gotten used to have the big events in difficult states.
That's true, but I know that FIFA is trying to, especially after the corruption crisis, I know that FIFA is trying to make sure football remains within a more transparent, governable European or like Western ethos. And I think there are pressure groups against FIFA and UEFA to make sure that football doesn't transform into this.
But at the same time, you told me that Turkish Football Federation has succeeded with Erdogan's help to be more powerful in UEFA now?
Well, in April there was the UEFA elections, and a Turkish businessman and a Turkish Football Federation delegate, Servet Yardımcı, was elected to this executive committee. For a while, Turkey didn't have a representative in the executive. According to the Turkish sports press, this is a positive step for lobbying opportunity. And this is how things work. This is not specific to Turkey. In UEFA, FIFA, things work by lobbying. So that, and this man is seen as a central link between the government in Turkey and the Football Federation, because he's a businessman. His brother was an AKP, I think, deputy. So he's seen as a sort of link between the government and the Football Federation. So he stands for a cooperation and mobilization of political and economic support for the Turkey's Euro 2024 bid as well.
Talking about football, Turkey, Europe, is it of any risk for you these days, such an interview?
Well, you never know. And everything is a risk. But I'm not sure. We always feel observed. I mean, at the time in Turkey, there is a arbitrary political atmosphere, so anything can lead to some sort of punishment, imprisonment. But I don't think an interview like this will be enough to put me in jail.
So we wish you all the best. Thank you, Can Evren.
Thank you.